Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Hi, listeners. I'd like to invite you to visit our website at organicgardenerpodcast.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter, download our ebook on organic gardening basics, and get started on building your very own organic oasis today. Welcome to the show, everybody. So I'm excited to have another guest from Aero that I met at the Aero workshop come on and talk to us about work that she's doing in Havre, Montana. Havre is another up on the High Line. So the High Line is what we call US 2, which is close to the Canadian border across the top of Montana. So welcome to the show, Rosie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for visiting with us. I know you're doing some important work over there. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and then your program.
Sure. So like Jackie said, my name is Rosie Goldich. I'm currently serving as an AmeriCorps Vista at Opportunity Link in Havre, Montana. I'm originally from Connecticut, so I'm a long way from home. So Opportunity Link is a nonprofit economic development organization here in Havre. Our operating region consists of, it's about the size of South Carolina, if it gives you a more visual description. So it's
That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah. So it's from Glacier County all the way out to Malta, Montana, and then all the way down to Cascade. Well, actually, I don't know what's more south, like Judith Basin or Cascade County, but that's kind of the area that we work in. And we also include those three reservations in that area. So that's Blackfeet Reservation, Rocky Boy Reservation, and Fort Belknap. So we do housing projects, downtown revitalization, things like that. We also are the parent organization of the North Central Montana Transit. It's a bus service, that goes, to Fort Belknap, Harlem, Rocky Boy, and then twice a week we have special service down to Great Falls. So it's a really great service and a lot of people use it. It's very low cost. It's $1 one way. So it makes it, you know, really affordable for people that need to get across the High Line and down to Great Falls for doctor's visits and things like that. So that's a little bit about what Opportunity Link does. What I do is I'm a Vista, and I was brought on for the North Central Montana Regional Food Assessment and Planning Project. But if you want a shorter name for that, we just call it the Community Food Project. And I was brought on to do some grant writing and local capacity building in Opportunity Link's operating region. For building local food systems and sustainable food systems and doing some outreach and education with people who might not be too familiar with what a local food system is. And within Opportunity Link's region, we have 8 USDA food deserts with about 20,000 people living in those food deserts. So there's definitely a lot of people who need better access to healthy foods, for sure.
Okay. So I'm sure listeners already have some questions kind of like I do. So do you want to explain kind of what, I don't know, should we start with food systems first or what a community food project is? I've talked about food deserts a little bit, but you might want to expand on it a little more because you have 8 food deserts?
8
in your
food
region?
Deserts, yes. So there is a definition for what a food desert is. And it's people who are low income and have low access to healthy, fresh food. So the food desert, it starts at, they have to travel 10 miles. So a rural food desert, which is what Montana is essentially, is a rural food desert is you have to travel over 10 miles to get to local healthy food. And then an urban food desert is traveling over 1 mile. So even in urban setting...
I'm glad you explained that.
Yeah. So even in an urban setting, traveling a mile is actually a pretty long distance. Mm-hmm. And in rural situations, you know, traveling over 10 or over even over 20 miles, you know, unfortunately, it's not that uncommon. So the food deserts that I study and that that we mainly work with are all rural food deserts. And a local food system is a community where you use local food. So some organizations do it up to 250 miles. So all the food that is grown and produced, processed and consumed within a 250 mile radius, or some people consider it a 450 mile radius. It depends on who you talk to. Unfortunately, there's no federal guidelines as to what is considered local.
Okay, I'm trying to think. 250 miles. So is that like the distance?
That's so, a pretty long
distance. That'd be... So that's 180 miles to Missoula. So that's
okay.
For yeah, me, so it's even further down by like Stevensville. For me to Stevensville, or going that way, I'm 145 miles from Browning.
Okay, so like Havre to Kalispell is 262 miles.
Oh, it is. Okay.
So, if that gives you like a better description, I guess.
Well, it helps me. I don't know how much it helps our listeners.
Yeah.
Who are all over the world, but
yeah, they no, kind
of,
sure.
I like the part, the way you described it as the size of South Carolina.
That yeah. Helps. Yeah. So if you think about, South Carolina, I really don't know how big it is, but that's, you know, that's what we tell people. And that gives people a good visual of like, mm-hmm. wow. So people are traveling up to 5 hours.
Right.
You know, your food travels 5 hours, and that's actually not that far. Average food and produce, specifically in the United States, travels approximately 1,500 miles from where it's grown to mm-hmm. where it's consumed. Yeah, and so which is a really interesting figure, I think.
Yeah, and you know, actually, so the episode you're going to be next Monday and Thursday's episode is Patty Armbruster. Yeah,
she's
and
great.
She's going to talk a lot about food miles. So by the time listeners hear your episode, they'll should have just heard hers right before.
Excellent.
So she talks a little about that, and she's also on the High Line. And
She's up in Hinsdale, and I know Patty not just from Arrow, but we're also on the steering committee for the Growing Leaders Youth Summit.
Oh, cool.
Have you heard about the Growing Leaders Youth Summit yet?
She was talking about something she's going to be a keynote speaker at.
Yes,
in October.
That's yeah.
And then she said there's going to be one in there's four places.
I think
she said there was one in Kalispell coming up.
I think Kalispell is the first one. So, Growing Leaders Youth Summit is a really great event that's happening all across Montana. So there's one at Rocky Boy Reservation, mm-hmm. which is awesome. Kalispell, Billings, Helena, and Bozeman. Maybe. And what it is, it's a partnership between NCAT, so National Center for Appropriate Technology, and local nonprofit organizations. And it's getting, you know, the youth of these communities interested in local foods, and not just from a commodity crop standpoint, not just what they're learning in FFA or 4-H, mm-hmm. but from people who work in local food systems and nutrition education. So Patty Armbruster is our keynote speaker. We also have Mike Dalton, who does Gardens from Garbage mm-hmm. Down in Great Falls. Who else? Dr. Bob Quinn, who does Kamut International out of Big Sandy. It's going to be a really great event. I'm on the steering committee for Rocky Boy Reservations event, and we're inviting kids from all over the High Line, kids and their teachers, to come and learn more about, you know, what's going on in Montana, what food systems and you know, food insecurity, food security issues that are going on in Montana right now. So ours is October 24th, and you can register online if you go to NCAT's website. So I think it's just NCAT.org. We'll put the contact information on the website.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, cool. Because some of my listeners will know, I talk a lot about in Kalispell. I'm not sure if it's a mile. I mean, so where they built the brand new high school, which has like 1,000 kids, uh-huh. is on this corner. There's like, you know, Home Depot there. They just built Cabela's. McDonald's is there. Starbucks, Applebee's. And so the kids the closest place to them, I mean, there is a Costco, but the closest place for them to get food starts with McDonald's. They can go across the highway. If they can get across the highway, they can go to Walmart, would be like the closest thing for a grocery store. There is a Naturals there. And I guess I did talk to one of the supermarket people at Naturals, and she said that the home economics teachers do bring the kids to Naturals, but I still just have a very hard time imagining a lot of the kids going, because it's in a mall, it's next to TJ Maxx, and, you know, it's not the easiest place. And to me, that is a huge food desert. And to say, you know, so the high school's there, there's all the people that work at those places. Oh, there's a Subway by Naturals, I guess, and a Taco Del Sol. There's probably some other places there. But mostly, you know, like a regular, like, grocery store, like an Albertsons or a Rosar's or a Safeway or a Super One Foods, there's nothing on the corner. And then the hospital's down the road. Mm-hmm. And then you can get, and to me, that's a huge food desert that we have in the Kalispell area, to me. And I think about it a lot, because that would be the corner. That's where I would go shopping before I pull out of town, because you could take Reserve right out to the Farnham Market Road. So to me, it's like everybody who lives up where I am, too. Also, I just don't understand how they could build all these places and there's no main supermarket there.
Yeah, no, I mean, that happens so much, especially in I mean, I wouldn't really consider Kalispell a rural community, but I think...
I consider it urban. There's apartments right there. Oh, I mean, like I said, there's 1,000 kids going to this high school.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's one of the big issues I'm looking at is, like, okay, there's a difference between, you know, a Costco apple versus an IGA apple versus, you know, one that you pick out of the tree out of your backyard. Mm-hmm. And the ones that you're getting out of these big box stores, you don't really know what's in them. You know, you don't know where they're produced most of the time, or if they do, like I said, they're outside of that 1500 mile mark, and they're, you know, pesticides and chemicals are being used. I mean, just things that are not healthy for you. So yes, eat more fruits and vegetables, but you really need to think about, okay, well, how many miles has this traveled, you know? And well, what kind of pesticides and chemicals am I ingesting right now? Mm-hmm. You know, and don't, you know, and GMOs and GME foods are just, I mean, it's definitely a whole nother subject that it's huge. But I think feeding, I mean, I focus on children's nutrition. So I think feeding the future of this generation and feeding, you know, America is just so important. And when the only option in a town like Kalispell is to go to Costco or Walmart or something like that, you know, not everyone can afford to buy organic, to buy locally grown foods. Mm-hmm. And especially in a place like Montana, you know, there are 56 farmers markets across Montana, which sounds like a lot.
It's a big state.
But it's a really big state. And there's a lot of gaps where people, their only option is to go to a convenience store. And, you know, they just aren't having the options that people need to eat healthy, good food for them.
Mm-hmm. And then even if you want to buy an apple at a convenience store, it's going to cost more.
Right.
And it's probably not going to be the healthiest, you know, freshest apple. They're not bad. I mean, you know, there's some options, but I think they're more likely, you know, there's 50 things of candy bars, 2 for $1, and donuts, and, you know, tons of junk food there. So,
when, you know, high sugar foods are, you know, cheaper, that's what people are going to want to buy because they can buy more of them for the same price as, you know, a healthier option. So I do understand, like, that temptation to be like, oh, well, you know, I can get 3 of these for $1. But, like, that apple is 1 for $1. Well, you know, what am I going to choose? That's just, it's a difficult decision, especially for a lot of rural, low-income families who are only thinking about, okay, well, my kids are hungry and I need to feed them. Mm-hmm. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's so true. There's lots of times where the cheapest option is not always the most healthy option, or you might want to choose a healthier option and it's way more expensive than.
Yeah, absolutely. Like. Yeah.
Okay. So then how do you work with, like, what are some of the common threads you found talking to people there?
Well, I think one issue that we're all really facing right now is that food systems and healthy food needs to be brought into the healthcare debate. I think one reason why health, you know, eating healthy and locally grown food just isn't being talked about a lot right now is because people aren't considering it good healthcare. And when you spend, when you're not eating well, and when you're eating, you know, junk food, highly processed food, high sugar, high fat, high sodium foods, your healthcare costs are going to increase. So I think one common thread I found is people wanting to lower their healthcare costs, people wanting to get off of pills and, you know, have to stop taking so many supplements and vitamins and things like that. And I believe that one way to do that is to eat better food, to give people higher access to better food at a cost that they can afford. But right now, that's just, it's not an option. And I don't see a lot of connections being made like that. So especially in an area where, you know, Montana has a very high obesity rate and a very high, you know, rate of type 2 diabetes. And people, I think eating right is definitely part of that healthy total lifestyle. And I hope through, you know, when I go out into the community and I talk to people about, yeah, I'm working with local food systems, people get really excited. So it's not that people don't want to eat well, they just don't have access to it. And I think, and I'm, so that's what I'm trying to figure out is, okay, well, how do we get locally grown good food for people into these rural communities? And have it processed in these local communities, you know? So, yeah, we grow, you know, cherries, for example, Flathead Valley cherries. Mm-hmm. Well, there are only a few processing centers in Montana, so they need to go out of state to be processed, and then they come back? How does that make any sense? So I think one really big issue and upcoming topic that needs to be discussed is having more local small processing centers in Montana so people can grow their own food, process it themselves, and then distribute it. There's just a bill passed in Montana, the Cottage Food Bill, and that allows people to process foods themselves, so like make jams and jellies and, you know, pickles, things like that, and process it themselves. Yes, there are more regulations just for health and safety things, health and safety rules. But I think that is definitely such a great step forward in the local food movement.
Mm-hmm. So I went to the Cottage Food Bill class. And so one of the, a lot of the things they talked about was, you know, you can create these things in your own home and then sell them locally, which I thought opened up a whole market of a whole opportunity for people to start marketing locally grown products without having the big expense of having to have a, you know, fancy kitchen or a storefront or something that would make it prohibitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think that's great. And I think it can, you know, not only does it promote local food and people, you know, eating from their gardens and growing, being more active in their gardens, but also it, I think it will help strengthen local farmers markets, you know, and it kind of breaks down that barrier of people who don't have access to a commercial kitchen to sell their products at local farmers market and hopefully, you know, bring in some income and some revenue for them so that, you know, they can continue on. And I think it's a really great move for local foods and also small businesses. So hopefully, you know, as the next farmer, we're kind of on the downward slope of farmers markets right now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, next spring when they all pick up, I really want to see, you know, more locally processed foods at farmers markets. I think it's really going to increase.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Joyce Pinson was one of my guests from Kentucky, and she said one of the biggest secrets to success at a farmer's market is having food that people can taste. And she cooks it right there at the farmer's market. Like, she'll cook squash or eggplant or something. And so then people taste it, and they're like, wow, this tastes so good. And look how easy it is. She's making it right here. I can see how she's doing it. It's not as, you know, scary or just like something that I'm never going to taste. Mm-hmm. I couldn't, you know, I don't know how to do this, so I'm not going to try it. And mm-hmm, so she said she can sell squashes right next to somebody who's giving them away for 25 cents, and she can sell them for like $3.99 a pound and, mm-hmm, you know, sell them all day because she's teaching people how to cook it at the same time and having a prepared food there. And I know my husband's always said that, you know, a big success would be having pickles right there, that people could get pickles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I absolutely agree with that. And I think, you know, another thing about eating healthy is, okay, well, you can't just give someone Brussels sprouts and expect them to know what to do with them. Mm-hmm. You know, you, especially if you've grown up living in a food desert, you know, it's, I think one of the big barriers is, yes, you can have access to local food, but do you know how to cook it and cook it in a healthy manner? Mm-hmm. I think that's a lot to ask people. So one of the programs I've been working on and trying to get funding for is to start community cooking classes in some of these communities, saying, this is a squash. Here are five different ways to cook it, and give, you know, prices on per serving. So this is $1.50 per serving, or, you know, things like that, so that people can say, okay, wow, like, this is really healthy for my family. It's giving me a lot of, you know, nutrients and vitamins, and it's not expensive. Especially with something like squash that grows all over Montana. Mm-hmm. So I do definitely agree. I think when people see how easy it is to cook a lot of local foods, then it definitely gets them more interested and says, oh yeah, I can totally be healthy too, and I can know how to cook the food that I grow and you know, do a value added product.
Mm-hmm. So a value-added product would be like the person who's growing the vegetables, like bringing some homemade bread or something to the farmer's market, right? Or to like a pickle. Or is that what you mean by a value-added product? Or so, having something that they can sell besides just their vegetable that they grew?
So from my understanding, it would be like turning selling cucumbers into selling pickles. Mm-hmm. So it's adding a monetary value to the original product. Does that make sense?
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So what else did you want to talk about or share? Do you go to the schools at all? Did you say you were working with the university or just do you have an office downtown? Or?
Yeah. So, well, my office is at Opportunity Link, and I've been working a lot with MSU Northern, and I've been working a lot with their bioenergy center. And also their botany department, they have a greenhouse currently that we're trying to get funding for to make usable, and then hopefully grow food in that greenhouse and bring kids from local school systems, from Opportunity Links region, to the greenhouse to see, look, this is how, you know, we're making peppers, we're growing tomatoes, and this is what they taste like. This is what a tomato that's not, you know, mm-hmm, loaded with chemicals, and, you know, it tastes really good. It's really sweet, you know, it doesn't taste like wood. It's really easy to grow. And I think getting the most important part for me about getting kids interested in food is having them grow it themselves. There's something so special and magical about seeing a kid say, look, I grew this carrot and now I'm going to eat this carrot because it's mine and I grew it. And that's really special. And I think community-based nutrition needs to start with kids, because then they tell their parents, you know, what they want to eat. And it definitely needs to be a family affair, a family thing. Mm-hmm. But getting kids interested in nutrition in schools is really important. Montana has an amazing food corps program. I don't know how many food corps there are, but they were at the Arrow annual meeting, And that's what food corps members do. They work with local public school systems and to get kids more involved in gardening and cooking food and stuff that's really, really important.
And the food corps is kind of like AmeriCorps or the Peace Corps, right? But it just is revolved around food.
Right.
And
right. So AmeriCorps Vistas are indirect service members, which means we do capacity building work. And food corps members are direct service. So they're working directly with kids, directly growing the vegetables, things like that. And there's also state AmeriCorps, who are kind of like Vistas as well. There's a bunch of different programs. And there's also Energy Corps members who work with renewable, sustainable energy. So there's a lot of different facets of that program.
Huh, I had no idea. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
You know what else I was going to say? When I was in Browning, I participated in like a healthy eating nutrition group where this girl, Kirsten, taught us how to cook foods and things. And I can't remember why I joined, you know, certainly to try to lose weight. And then from there, she started a running program. And that's how I ended up running my first 5K and then eventually my first half marathon. So,
wow, awesome.
You can go. It's amazing the way it can change everything for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so no, definitely.
Programs are super important. And I was so glad. It was so nice to have like a group of people. We would meet each week and then I had a running partner. That definitely was a huge part to my success. Mm-hmm. There were four of us that would go, but there were two of us kind of older folks and then the two kids, we'd call them, which they were probably in their 30s.
Yeah.
We called them the kids anyway. They could lap us easily in the morning. Yeah. But it was just, you know, the four of us got out there and went 3 days a week and that was just mm-hmm. huge. So
yeah. Healthy eating and food build such a great community. Mm-hmm. I think when you find a certain topic you're really passionate about, you know, when you're really passionate about gardening and food, you find these awesome people. And it just, you know, like you said, like you met them through this cooking class mm-hmm. and then you started this whole running club. And, you know, that it's just such a great story to hear about how, you know, hey, we all want to come together and, you know, maybe someone's goal is to lose weight and someone's goal is to be a better gardener. But you all came together and that's such an awesome story.
Yeah, and I can still run a mile. I like ran a mile just a couple of weeks ago after not having nice. Runs, pretty much since I started my podcast because it takes so much time. So like last February, I was running a lot, and last January after New Year's pretty regularly, and then I hadn't run like almost all summer. And mm-hmm. so, and that all stems from, I mean, 3 years ago, I can still remember the first day, like running 30 seconds was like, you know, just dying. And I remember yeah. being like, oh, when is the minute going to be, you know, we'd run like 30 seconds and walk a minute. And then the next day yeah. we'd run like 90 seconds and walk. And I'd be like, when's the 90 seconds going to be over? And now yeah. that I can still 2 years later, still run that far without stopping was pretty, yeah. I was pretty psyched to see that. So
yeah,
it awesome. Can lead to all sorts of different things.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean,
there, but
that's okay. I think a good example too would be I became a vegetarian just over 5 years ago.
Oh.
And I started because I watched the documentary Food Inc. in school. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever seen it, if you don't know anything about food systems or the American food culture, it's definitely an interesting documentary to watch. Definitely opened my eyes to a lot of how meat slaughtering is done, and Conagra, Monsanto, all those current, you know, food systems issues right now. And so I was like, oh man, I don't think I can ever eat a, you know, chicken nugget again or a hamburger again. So I initially went vegetarian and you know, it just kind of stuck. And so I started doing a lot more food research about, okay, well, like, what is American food culture? How has it changed? How is food culture different in different areas of the world? So I started reading a lot more. Read some books. I read Omnivore's Dilemma by Michael Pollan. Mark Bittman, who is a huge food writer, huge food culture expert actually went to the same university I did, many years apart, but so I read some of his stuff. He's the author of the book How to Cook Everything. So if you've ever read any, like, how to cook vegetarian, how to cook meat, how to cook soup, there's like a bunch of different versions of them, but he's that author. And he used to be a New York Times writer, about a food writer, and his articles are just like really interesting. He did this article, this research project on the true cost of a hamburger. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh wow, this is insane. So I think as I continued on my like personal research, it started becoming something that I really wanted to like work in. And I wanted to turn it into, you know, a career. Like, oh wow, I can definitely, you know, work in nutrition education and be do food research and food economics. And I took this class at Clark University called Food Economics, and it really helped me understand what the current issues are on the producer side of it and also the consumer side. And that's kind of where my love for food research came to be. So it's definitely a personal passion of mine. I'm really glad that I can be working in it, you know, because it's, you know, it's something that I love so much.
Awesome. See, and that's what I was just talking to my grandkids yesterday. And I always tell other kids, like, when you go to college, you don't always know. You don't even know there's so many jobs and so many careers and so many things out there you don't even know exist. And just these side shoots. And then, you know, you could be sitting in like some totally boring Greek philosophy class or something, and the person sitting next to you, you strike up a conversation with, and they happen to have a cousin whose neighbor does some field that you've never even heard of, and the next thing you know, you're like, wow, that's, you know, what I want to end up doing. Or
you know,
there's all sorts of jobs and things out there that you can try, or people that you'll meet, and, you know, a lot of it's also clubs that you join, or, you know, activities that you partake in, or field trips you go on. Like, look at the Montana EVST environmental study students who were at the Aero convention, and, you know, that was part of their classwork to come and learn. And
there's
always things you don't know that you really learn about.
When I graduated, I wanted to get my master's, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And but I came to Montana, and I was, you know, I'm weighing my options, you know, and I noticed that MSU and University of Montana both have sustainable food systems, you know, tracks for their environmental studies. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Not just in, and you know, it's not a sociology or thing, it's an environmental studies. And I think that says so much about how linked food systems research and environmental research is. I loved it. I thought I was really great. And I was like, oh man, maybe I do know what I want to do after my VISTA year is up. That just makes me so excited that more and more people are getting interested in, you know, food systems research, especially, you know, in academia.
And I like the way, you tied that together with the environmental studies program.
Yeah.
So I didn't even know. I was talking to somebody, like, I didn't even know what environmental studies was till I moved to Montana and started going to school at U of M. Mm-hmm. That was the first place I had ever heard of an environmental studies program or major. So, yeah.
Wow.
Excellent. Okay. Well, what else can we chat about? Anything else to share? I mean, we're at a half hour, so we're doing pretty good, but...
I think I said all the stuff that I'm currently working on. Yeah. Oh, well, I noticed you already interviewed Jen. But do you want me to talk about Abundant Montana a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So how I got involved with Aero and how I, you know, was interested in going to their annual meeting is, I started working on their Abundant Montana project in June of this year, and I was actually using it before I started working for them.
Okay, do you want to tell listeners what that is?
Yeah. Okay. So Abundant Montana is this really great interactive map, and it's a map of Montana It's just abundantmontana.org. And you can go on and you can search. It's like an agritourism site, essentially. But you can search for community-supported agriculture. You can search for farms and ranches. You can search for farmers markets, food and ag organizations, food and drink, which is a category that where restaurants who specialize in local food or have local food plans have signed up. There's also an other category just for, you know, everything that doesn't fall under there. Mm-hmm. And you can also search by where you are. So you can search by city. You can search by your zip code. You can search by and you can also search by the name of the place that you're looking for. So say, like here in Havre, I can search Bear Paw Meats. And Bear Paw Meats will come up with two different listings. One is their processing plant in Chinook, and the other one is their store here in Havre. So it's a really great tool if you're looking for local food. You know, if you're a parent or just anyone looking, to get local food, saying, where's my local farmer's market? And what are the hours? And who's the contact? And if you're a farmer interested in selling at your local farmer's market, you can search which one is closest to you and get the market manager's information so you can, set up a connection there. So what I did for Arrow is I added more listings to the site, and I also updated the ones that needed assistance. So they were out of date, there were spelling errors, location errors, things like that. And I updated that for them. So that's what I did for a little bit. And then we also developed a marketing plan. So all over Montana, if you're a native of the big cities, you should see Abundant Montana billboards. And they're great big billboards, and they say abundantmontana.org on them. And there's one in Great Falls, Kalispell, Helena, Bozeman, Billings, and maybe one in Missoula, I think. And it's a great way, that was part of the marketing plan that I did for them. Mm-hmm. And we also are doing, a promotional material plan. So, posters, postcards, things like that. So hopefully, you should see a lot more Abundant Montana stuff popping up around the state.
And also, can't, like, if you have a farm, like, you could list, like, your CSA if people wanted to join.
Uh-huh.
Just, like, yep. Anything about your farm, you could just, yep, list it there, right?
Yeah. So if you want to submit a listing or you want to update your original listing, you can go on the abundantmontana.org website. And up at the top, there are a couple different options. But yes, you can update a listing and submit a listing. And if you have any questions at all, you can email abundantmt@arrowmt.org. And that will give you all the information you need to set up your own listing or edit some information so that you can, you can get people more interested in your farm or your ranch or if you work for a food organization, things like that. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really great tool, and it especially I think it helps a lot in Eastern Montana, just because we are so rural out here, and I think it helps with farmers markets. You can say, oh wait, I know there's a farmers market in my community sometime, but I don't know what the hours are, I don't know where the location is, and all that information is up there.
Mm-hmm. So and it's also, I bet there's like community gardens are listed there too, aren't they?
A couple.
They will start joining.
Yeah,
it would be
yeah,
the place for them
sure.
to list a community
yeah,
garden.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think that might go under the other category, mm-hmm. But yeah, community gardens definitely are more than welcome to join. And it is completely free. I'm sorry, I should have said that. So when you sign up, you don't need to. To pay to be on Abundant. It's completely free for if you want to use Abundant to find your local food and if you want to submit a listing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's awesome. I think it's a great idea. And I've been there. Yeah. You can, it's really easy to search. And I think it also, like, you can look by county, which in Montana is kind of how we look for things a lot.
Yeah, so you can look by county. And also there are 5 or 6 designated regions of Montana that Arrow created. So if you're in Glacier, in the Glacier County, you can look for different listings all over, you know, your county, which includes, you know, Kalispell and Whitefish and a couple other cities. So yeah, you can say, you know, oh, well, I can travel up to 50 miles or 60 miles, and then you can look within that radius. So it's pretty cool.
Yep, because when we live in rural Montana, traveling up to 60 miles to get somewhere is not unusual.
Not that, yeah, not that big of a deal. Yeah.
You know what I was going to ask you is that when I taught over on the east side and lived in Cut Bank, which isn't very far from you, I noticed that, like, dairy products were so much more expensive on that side of the mountains than they are over here. And that would be a reason why I could see people from those areas wanting to come to Kalispell and to the Flathead, because I don't know about Great Falls, but I know, like, going to Cut Bank, even to the regular Albertsons, which my, they finally got a big grocery store in Browning when I was there, but my first year, Albertson was really the biggest store, and just, I could never afford to buy cheese over there, and rarely, I would usually bring it from here, because... Do you have, like, anything to say about that at all? Or
wow,
why it seems like dairy products to me seem so much more, like, cheese would be where it would be, like, $5 for a 2-pound block of cheese here would be, like, $8 for a 2-pound block of cheese here, there, which now our 2-pound box of cheese are up to, like, $8. But they were, wow, it was just a bit more expensive over there.
Yeah, I have to say that's not something I've really studied too hard. I've definitely noticed it. When I personally buy milk or cheese, but that's definitely something I can look into, and I think there must be an explanation for it. But yeah, I think it is interesting, and that's definitely a barrier to someone who wants to start buying, you know, local milk for their family or just for themselves. And, you know, it's a lot more expensive than the regular milk, regular, you know, big agri company milk. And that's just like, you know,
well, that was one of the things I think the cottage food thing addressed, was that you can't sell any kind of milk that's not pasteurized. Yeah. There was no milk. You couldn't put it in your baked goods or anything. But you could sell eggs, which I was surprised and excited to hear that you could sell your own locally grown eggs from your own chickens.
Yeah, selling. There's a lot of regulation around selling milk and, you know, pasteurization and things like that. So that doesn't surprise me. But yeah, you can buy eggs. You can buy your eggs local, which is awesome.
Well, cool. Well, thank you so much for sharing everything with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. This was awesome. I'm so excited. I was looking through the previous podcasts of people who have, you know, spoken, and I'm really excited to be part of that group.
Thanks. Yeah, and then hopefully I'll have a lot more Arrow people are going to come on in the near future. So.
Awesome. Awesome.
I made some good connections. That was such a great
weekend. Yeah. Oh my gosh. It was awesome. It was so awesome. And I learned so much. I'm so glad I got to see Sarah Calhoun of Red Ants Pants Peak. Oh man. And she's a local Connecticut girl. So shout out to Connecticut, which I thought was awesome. And then hearing Liz Carlisle speak and hearing about the Lentil Underground and hearing all the research that she does is just so awesome and so inspiring, I think. So I was so glad I went. And the food was awesome. So that helps.
It did, didn't it? It was great food. They did a good job.
So on the cake off, like, all the cakes were just absolutely amazing.
Yeah. I was too hard of a choice for me.
We got the cheesecake. We got, like, original cheesecake with choke cherry icing on it. Not icing. Like, drizzle, like, on it.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Oh, so good. So good.
And the gluten-free cakes seemed to have the biggest competition. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Over those the most.
There was a vegan, I think it was gluten-free. Or no, I think it was vegan but not gluten-free. And then there was another gluten-free but not vegan chocolate beet cake. Mm-hmm. Did you try that?
Mm-hmm.
It was
the next
awesome.
Day there were still leftovers of that, and I got to taste a little. The one with the purple frosting all over it.
Yes,
that was the one I tasted. But I know people were fighting over there was some kind of white
gluten-free cake that I know people were really excited about.
I think everyone was fighting over everyone's cake.
Yeah.
Like, it was awesome. It was really good.
They were really pretty decorated, too.
Yeah.
I never seen people so excited about cakes. And it sounded like they raised a lot of money from those cakes.
I know. So, what was that? They had, like, 30 seconds. Okay? 30 seconds to, like, you know, put as much money into the envelope as possible and then hand it to them. And within that 30 seconds, almost $600 was raised.
Wow.
That's insane.
For some cakes. But I'm so glad. For a dozen cakes.
For cake. It was really good cake, though. But I'm so glad. And all that money is going towards Aero, which is an awesome organization. And they do such great work with, you know, sustainable energy and local food systems and, you know, really, really cool stuff. So I was more than willing to put money into the envelope to support them. Mm-hmm.
And it was fun. Lots of excitement in the air. It was a great,
really cool, really people great everywhere. People. Yes. Yeah. Like, really nice, awesome people who are super passionate about what they do and coming together for such a great cause. And I mean, you know, a weekend in the Highwood Mountains of Montana, you know, I'll take it. You know, it was so beautiful. It was a little chilly by the end, but it was absolutely
beautiful.
Yeah,
it really dropped down that last night. Yeah. I slept out in my tent that night too and was like,
oh, really?
Okay.
Oh,
yeah. Man. It was good though. Hey, I got to ask you my final question.
Yeah.
So if there was one change you would like to see, Rosie, to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization, which you could pick Aero, that you're passionate about or a project you would like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
Wow.
I know, it's a doozy.
That's a doozy of a question.
You can think about it.
Yeah, okay. So I think, I don't know if this is, I think one thing we all need to realize is that everything is interconnected and that everything touches everything else. You know, by the way we produce our food, to the way we sell our food, to the way we eat our food, I mean, and the way we get rid of our food is just so, it's so out of proportion, I feel. And I feel like through the industrialization, our production levels have just skyrocketed. But with those production levels, we've also, you know, increased climate change issues. You know, and I think that's taken such a hard toll on our local food systems. And also food waste now is a huge issue. The fact that, you know, 40% of all food is just thrown straight in the trash. Like, that's not okay. That's not okay, especially when so many people are going hungry and so many people could benefit from that food. I think we need to realize that, like I said, everything is interconnected. And if we don't, you know, one small change in one part of the system can affect everything else. So if we start really buying local food and demanding local food, I think national changes and international changes can really start to occur. But people need to start demanding local food. And some people are. Most people are. Mm-hmm. Which is so, you know, which is so necessary. And by demanding local food, you cut down transportation costs. You know, and then, you know, big, large commodity crop farms start to change their attitudes. And people like the Lentil Underground. Farmers coming together saying, you know, we need healthier soil for a healthier product, or else, you know, we can't use this land anymore. I think when you start to really think about the production of what we consume is when you change your consumption choices. So instead of saying, oh, well, this apple is, you know, 50 cents, let's say, but I could also buy this other apple, which is, you know, 75 cents, but it comes from a local Montana farmer and, you know, didn't travel over 1,000 miles to get to my dinner plate, I think that change needs to occur. Because then when you change your local food buying, you start supporting local farmers. You start putting money back into local small farmers' pockets. And I think that really is the start to the change of the system that we need. But as far as, you know, huge, you know, what can we do to make a greener world? Oh, man. There's so many things I could say. But I think making people realize that, you know, all produce is not the same. It is not all produced the same way. It is not all come from the same area. And get people aware of what they're buying, you know, and what they think is healthy might not be the best option for them.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I think that's a great way to sum it up. Okay. Perfect.
Okay. So do you want me to do contact information?
Yeah. Or? Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool. So the way, if you have any questions about what I'm doing or what Opportunity Link does, or if you want to just know more about local food system stuff and you want to chat, my phone number, Opportunity Link's phone number, is 406-265-3699. And my email is Vista, V-I-S-T-A, at Opportunity linkmt.org. Like us on Facebook, like Opportunity Link on Facebook. Yeah, buy local.
Perfect. That's a great way to end. Thank you so much, Rosie.
Thank you. This is so much fun.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'd like to encourage you to check out our website at organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com, and you'll see the links to everything that we've talked about today in the show notes page and all the other episodes there. You can easily search for people by name. You can download our ebook on organic gardening basics and subscribe to our newsletter for updates and just different things that are going on. Thanks for listening, and remember to grow